Hello and welcome to the first programme of Radio Free Market World Report with me, your host, Andy Duncan. First of all, I must apologise for my slightly hoarse voice, but as Michael McKay would say, the show must go on. In the book Smiley's People by John le Carré, set in the 1970s, the culturally distinct Estonia, with its own language closer related to Finnish, was under the iron grip of Soviet rule. Estonia had been in this freezer since 1939. In the 1970s, it looked like Estonia would always be under the thumb of the Soviets. However, one of the characters in le Carré's book, an Estonian émigré named Mikhail, said the Russian occupiers would eventually be beaten by the émigré organisations. And he was right, because when the Berlin Wall did crumble, Estonia escaped, with full independence being declared on August the 21st, 1991. I thought it would be interesting to get the view from inside Estonia now, 20 years after this glorious day of freedom. So tonight I'm speaking to Paul Verheer, entrepreneur and a major promoter of Mises and libertarian ideas in Estonia. Good evening, Paul.
Good evening, Andy. Nice to talk to you.
Can you give us a small snapshot of Estonia?
Well, Estonia is a quite small country in Northern Europe. It's in the Baltic region, which is three small states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. We are south of Finland, Russia, and by the Baltic Sea. There is about 1.3 million people living in Estonia. So it's, in the world context, it's a small country. Estonia has been over the ages been under the rule of different kingdoms and empires and other such entities. We got our independence in 1918, after our independence war, where we fought Soviet Russian forces and some local German forces and got our independence, which we tragically lost 20 years later to Soviet Union because of Soviet Nazi secret pact they made. Then we got our independence back in 1991. And well, if you don't count the EU losing our independence, then you can say we've been independent ever since.
Whenever I meet you, Paul, you always look about 21, 22 years old. Maybe you're slightly older than that. I was just wondering, can you remember what it was like being a subject of the USSR?
1991, I was 15 when the Soviet Union ended. So it definitely was of age where you can remember things. It was interesting times. Looking back, it looks quite bizarre. Besides the political things to which I maybe didn't pay so much attention at the time, there were this also these things regarding everyday life. So you had different kind of retail system than we have now. For example, in my neighborhood, we had like a different store for bread and different store for milk and such things. Soviet Union, all the stuff you bought, for example, you know, some household appliances, something like that, they were, you know, really big and heavy, and they had the price stamped on them, not a label, but just, you know, engraved into the product. Of course, living conditions back then were much more lower life quality than we have now. So politically, it was also strange. You had the newspapers, which I started reading when I was younger, but I maybe didn't have a coherent political view. So you had this kind of pompous speeches that how they are fulfilling the whatever year plan they were fulfilling. So all these kind of things. So it was a strange time.
And so then perestroika arrived in the Soviet Union, and in 1989, 2 million people formed a human chain throughout the Baltic Republics, as they were to become, which helped push the Soviets out. Were you in the chain as a 13-year-old boy?
My brother and my older brother and my mother were in the chain, but I wasn't. I was at our country home with my father. So I was just thinking, looking back, it's kind of, maybe I missed some events there. Maybe I could have attended. But I didn't take place in that event or some other bigger, but attended some smaller events which didn't create so much news coverage in the Western world. So, but I followed them, of course, through the media. So I was aware they were going on and were very excited about them.
When your brothers were in the 3 million people who joined arms together, were they singing? Is that why it's called the Singing Revolution?
People sang patriotic songs. So that's where they sing. If you're lined up in a 600-kilometer line, it's kind of, there wasn't so much singing there. But I guess people kept up their spirit by doing some singing here and there, definitely. But mostly they took place in some special events and special venues.
I'm looking for the day when Britain leaves the EU. That's going to be my similar moon landing moment. Okay, coming back to the present then, 20 years on, Estonia has achieved the highest GDP per person of any country that used to be in the Soviet Union. How did Estonia reach this fantastic goal?
We started right away with the reforms. Well, actually, there was like a year of time after declaring independence until the reforms started after the next three elections. And reforms which we enacted, they were done in a kind of shock therapy matter way rather than more measured pace that other countries took. Reforms that were enacted were, for example, flat income tax, 26% at that time, then unilateral free trade, stable monetary system. In 1992, we got our own currency called Estonian krone, which was a real currency board system, unlike maybe what they had in Argentina. They didn't have the real thing. They just cheated. So we had a real one, and all the Estonian currency that the central bank issued was 100% backed by Deutsche Mark assets like bonds and such. So it was 100% backed, and that we had a that gave rise to a really stable monetary system.
So not Misesian, but almost Hayekian.
Yes, exactly. And it wasn't floating. So Estonian lawgivers or the people who came up with the system, they thought it's better not trust local central bankers to set interest rates and such, but rather, you know, tie them up to some bigger, more stable currency. And at that time, the German mark was definitely one of the most stable ones in our neighborhood.
In most of Eastern Europe, when countries have come into the EU, most of them have just swapped communism for Western European socialism, so not really much difference. Whereas what the Estonians seem to have done seems to have sounded a lot more radical. Was there any Austrian influence going on there?
I think by different intellectuals whose work has influenced thought in Estonia, Milton Friedman was pretty high. For example, the Prime Minister Mart Laar, who was Prime Minister from 1992 for a year or two, created a lot of these reforms. He said that he had read one book of economics, and that was Free to Choose. And also, a lot of people had read Hayek. I'm not aware that Mises was, or Rothbard, was known at that time widely in Estonia. So, yeah, there was some maybe Austrian influence by Hayek, but also by Milton Friedman's.
We both know that Hayek and Milton Friedman were both socialists.
Well, I mean, that's why I don't have a libertarian utopia here, I guess. Another reform thing that we did, which was, I think, very important, was privatization. You know, in Soviet times, all of the capital goods belonged to the state, and also a lot of houses and dwellings and such. So we had privatization, which was two-part. One was restitution to the original owners or their heirs, and another one was done through vouchers. And it was pretty much complete. Only some big infrastructure companies was left in the state hands. But most of these smaller companies and mid-sized companies was privatized, and it was done.
There must have been a lot of people in Estonia who were embedded into the Soviet bureaucracy, made a living by being regulators and so forth. How did they cope with the change? Did they accept it, or did they go to Russia, or what did they do?
It was different. I mean, if people had a Russian background, I don't know exactly what was the demographics at that time, but definitely I imagine there were some people who came from Russia to help rule Estonia. So I guess most of those people went back, you know, right away, and then maybe worked on somewhere in some Russian bureaucracy or something like that, or maybe just private people. A lot of people who were high up and then were still of not the advanced age, some of them managed pretty good after that. They went into private sector to become investors. They were smart people, definitely, and then had connections, so they made use of that. And then people who were a little bit on the lower in the party structures, they joined the politics and became successful Estonian politicians. One of them, kind of president of Soviet Estonia, that he 10 years later became president of the Free Estonians. He was very kind of charismatic person in a way, so that helped him, you know, and then also too ideological, so he could switch side. But a lot of people, I guess, in the lower rung, they somewhat swept aside. They say that the 1990s was a heyday for the 10 to 35-year-olds who could more easily adapt to a new economic situation, that make use of freedom and capitalism that arise. So they were winner generation that time, and that was quite notable. For example, Mart Laar at that time was 30 to 35, and then somebody even in the government, I think foreign minister, was 28, 29. So there was an age shift, but a lot of people managed to, you know, stay in a cane, so to say, and some didn't.
Most politicians, I think, always drop their ideology as soon as they see where the power's going. Okay, in a recent survey of economic freedom by the Fraser Institute, Estonia came in 12th, so you've come a long way in 20 years. This is ahead of countries like the Netherlands and Germany, who came in 21st and 24th. The general trend in the UK and the US is one of wealth production increasingly being squeezed by boneheads in government. How does it feel in Estonia?
I mean, the most visible policies you see, like, you know, budgetary policies, fiscal policies, taxes, etc., they are more or less stable, so there isn't big growth there towards socialism. But you do see growth in kind of everyday regulations or specific regulations for specific industries. So we think Estonian bureaucracy seems to want to catch up with the West now. And when they are adapting new regulations from the European Union, they sometimes take the stricter interpretation of these regulations and even more stricter than what the European Union directives demand or suggest. I've been experienced some of it myself. And I guess, you know, bureaucrats, they have to keep themselves in a justified their existence, so, and a lot of what they do is writing up new laws, even if parliament, they tend to be, you know, majority tends to be more liberal or economically less regulating. They don't pay so much attention to all, you know, the laws they pass. So there are a lot of regulative points that get through that harm business. But, you know, nevertheless, I think we can look into the future with some measured optimism in that regard. So it's not all bad.
We call that process gold plating in the UK, where an EU regulation gets bumped up by the bureaucrats so they can employ more bureaucrats and build their little empires that little bit larger and pay themselves that little bit more. I was surprised when Estonia and everyone else joined the EU, because after so many years of being in the Russian Empire, why would they want to join the Franco-German Empire? Is this to evade the power of Moscow, or was it because the Estonian people actually believe in the EU?
I think it was, for many, many people, it was to avoid to be under the influence of Moscow. You know, myself personally, I mean, I was skeptical of EU. I'm much more skeptical now, but in 2004, or was it 2003 when we voted for it, I wasn't that skeptical. So, and then I was kind of, you know, I don't know if it's good or not. And then I went into the referendum booth to cast my vote. And then I just thought for myself, and I imagined, you know, big Mother Russia, and then I voted yes for EU. I think for a lot of people, this is the motivation to vote for EU. It's kind of being on the edge of two big empires, kind of very hard to maintain your independence from either of them. So better be a proactive and make your own choice of which you join. So we have experienced the Russian one for a while now, so let's try the other one. And I think for a lot of people, it's also they want to feel that they belong to Europe, that they are not thought of as some kind of Russians. So for them, they don't maybe distinguish so much between kind of cultural Europe and economic or political Europe. I guess a lot of people voted for that reason as well.
Well, I'm hoping in the last couple of days we're starting to see the death throes of the EU as Greece and Portugal drown the whole of the rest of the EU in massive debt. I think Estonia seems to be in a very good position, because ever since their recession in 2008 following the Lehman Brothers collapse, Estonia has a lot lower unemployment than anyone else. It has rocketing growth. It's got soaring exports. It's got the flat income tax, as you said earlier, free trade. And this is the best of all, a government budget surplus, which I can't believe. Although it has picked up the dangerous nickname the Baltic Tiger, which the Celtic Tiger of Ireland might be a slight warning there. Estonia almost sounds like a minarchist paradise. What's so right about Estonia that's so wrong in Greece and Portugal?
It's quite amazing. As far as I know, I'm not sure that they are in surplus, that they will be in surplus this year. But it's close to balanced. So it's either 1% or some such of GDP that we are in deficit. But in overall, it has conservative fiscal policy. Balanced budget, I think, has been unwritten law, or even maybe I think it was even somewhere written, but I'm not sure. But that has been definitely being followed. We have very little government debt. It's, I think it's 7%, and as far as I know, it's the lowest in European Union. Even Luxembourg, which is a very rich country, has 12% or some such. Plus, we, besides low debt, government has actually reserves, so it has saved up some money and can use this money, you know, for sudden expenses that they need to pay, or now they are using, so they don't have to lend that much money. There was very little stimulus spending after 2008. There wasn't no big top program like they had in the US or something like that. There probably were some smaller programs of, you know, invigorating smaller enterprises, something like that, but I'm not aware that they spent too much money on that.
A lot of people around the world will be, say, in the United States or the UK, will be wanting to divest themselves and diversify out of the US or the UK. They'll be frightened by Europe, even Germany, because Greece and Portugal are going to pull Germany down. So they'll be looking at Norway and Switzerland and Canada and Australia, etc. Do you think these outside investors should look at Estonia?
Of course, investing is very kind of specific and particular process. I mean, you need to to know, you know, where you're investing. It's kind of actually not correct to say you invest in some country, you know, you invest in some company, you invest in some people. So the economic climate for investors is quite welcoming. There is no inhibition on transfer capital into Estonia. One thing I forgot to mention before when we talked about the reforms that they took in Estonia was that in 2001, they abolished corporate income tax. If you make profit year over year and reinvest it tax-free, it's only when you pay dividends that you have to pay income tax. It's quite welcoming in that regard to invest in Estonia if you find particularly good investment project for that purpose.
You've had quite a number of businesses over the years. What's your current business?
I'm starting a new one, which has a website called startcompanyinestonia.com. And it's a rather simple business of helping foreigners to have their own Estonian private limited company or stock company if they want such. That's my business. I'm only starting. I hope the website is more or less done by the time the people are hearing this website. And I'm looking forward to find many people all over the world who want to invest in Estonia and make use of favorable business and tax climate here.
Fantastic. Never let it be said that I don't allow my interviewees to plug themselves and their businesses. You also do some other work in Tallinn. You do a lot of work with the Mises Circle, and you're also the main player behind Mises.ee, which is an Estonian Mises website. How successful are the ideas of liberty in Estonia?
That's quite interesting, because this more or less liberal economic ideas has been popular in Estonia for the past 20 years. They have been put into practice by different governments. There isn't such a big, wide libertarian activist movement, because a lot of people who would do that, they are already in government, but in the parties that put, you know, in the liberal parties that are in power right now. So we don't have our own big think tank or institute promoting the ideas. And what we have had is this kind of more informal get-togethers, circles, different kind of clubs, which I have been participating in and organizing over the years. So the latest reincarnation of which is the Mises Circle Tallinn, which actually reflects the more Austrian type of libertarianism in Estonia. So there are a lot of young people who have found on their own Austrian economics, either through newrockwell.com, saw the last Ron Paul campaign, the one 4 years ago. There are a lot of these young people, which is very encouraging. We'll see where we go from here. And our main aim at the moment is to follow on the footsteps of Mises Institute and to be more educational rather than political activist or to do some think tanking.
I think everything you're doing in Tallinn is absolutely amazing and wonderful. And I'd like to thank you for all of your efforts on behalf of all Misesians around the world. Thank you, Paul Verheer, and good night.
Thank you.